welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host, Jam, and with me as always are Nick and Becca and Mark.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello. We have a great show for you this week. This week we're doing something special that's very close to my heart. We're going to be introducing you to our iconic campaign world, that of Tanar. So we're going to be talking about the setting that we're going to be using going forward to do our random encounters, when we do our publishing of our random encounters, what we're setting them in. Nick, do you want to explain why we're doing our own setting?
Yeah. Last season, we did a number of random encounters, and we kind of brainstormed what sort of adventure could you be having in this particular setting, or is maybe centered around a particular icon. And we had promised to our patrons that once we hit a certain threshold, we'd be taking those and converting them into actual printed products. As we were getting very close to that goal, starting to do some preliminary work toward that. And one of the things that we're realizing is there's this whole issue about intellectual property. And the Dragon Empire and all of those icons are not covered by the open license for 13th Age. And so after talking about it amongst ourselves and spitballing a number of ideas of how to handle this, conversion of what we can freely talk about on the podcast into an actual product that we're making available, we decided to take Tanar, which is a campaign setting of James' creation, and we've all played in it and have lent varying degrees of lending a hand in kind of fleshing it out a little bit and kind of leaning into that and developing it and having everything that we do as Iconic be kind of set in that world.
Mm-hmm. Well, our choices were come up with a new world from scratch. JM graciously offered a world that he has run for
12 years.
Yeah, 12-ish years, yeah. Different times, different areas. And it's TA'NAR. So right. In case you're
wondering. All good fantasy settings have to have at least one yes. apostrophe in it.
So JM, what are your thoughts on Tanar and bringing it to printed life like this?
It was interesting because when I originally started writing it, I was writing it with a buddy of mine, BC. And we just kind of sketched out a number of ages even before I knew what 13th Age was. We called them the Ages of Tanar, and we had this idea, and I went to actually Mark's family and was like, hey, I got this new campaign world, and I want to start fleshing out because I'd like to do some short story writing in it and some novel writing in it. And they jumped on board, and they ended up causing a chain of events in the very first adventure that took a decade of play to resolve, which was amazing. And so
what system were you using?
Oh man.
If you remember.
I do. I think we started it off in GURPS, and then the second major campaign that I did was in Champions. And then it went through Pathfinder and D&D 4 and D&D 5. We did the D&D Next playtest in it. I've run multiple 13th Age games in it. I think there might even be two or three more. Or I did a new Numenera conversion. I used Axe for it a couple of times, and
yeah, the Pathfinder playtest.
We did the Pathfinder playtest in it. It's seen a lot of, as my friend Richard kind of describes it, it's a campaign setting with a lot of moss on it. Like there's some growth to it that kind of he enjoyed. So That's kind of why I'm excited about doing this. I mean, I have 150,000 word novel written in it, and I've got a number of short stories written in it. So that's me. Now, you guys have all played in it. What are your thoughts about using Tanar as kind of the setting going forward for our publication releases?
Well, one of the things that I like about it is it's familiar fantasy. Any fantasy game that you've really played in, all of those tropes, they're all still here, but there's a bit of a twist and a different kind of a take on them. And so while it's familiar and comfortable, it's also new and adventurous and awe-inspiring. I also like the fact that as we've played in it together, the world itself has kind of grown and morphed, and the things that we are doing as characters in the game are actually having a ripple effect where, 10 years later, you're still dealing with the ramifications of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. As one of the persons who's caused one of those major changes, if you heard that sigh, I live for that delicious, forlorn, despair-filled sigh.
I remember that encounter with Histall, and it was my very first time playing a role-playing game as a play-by-post, and I thought I had no frame of reference for how to play games, and so it's like, well, wait a second, in this middle of combat, why are we fighting this guy? Let's just talk to him instead, not knowing that in role-playing games, you fight the monster because the monster's there.
No, you did
and
great.
It was, I loved it in the moment, and every campaign since then, I have that love-hate relationship with that choice I made all those years ago.
So I had just a random encounter planned, and like Histall was basically a nobody in that first campaign, and Nick made a deal with them, and it was beautiful. It was a great moment in the role play, but that has triggered a domino effect until Histall is one of those NPCs that people love to hate.
Histall is an icon.
Yeah. Now.
That is what has happened in this world, is player choices have created things, which I find awesome. I am playing in several different games set in Tanar, and in one of the games, I happen to be a warlock, and my patron is a friend's old character. And it is fun to be able to write to this person and say, hey, if I'm following your character, what do I need to make sure I do? It's just, it's got so much to it. It's not just something, it feels weighty the way 13th Age has history behind it. The Dragon Empire has history behind it. Since you've been working on this for so long, it has history. And that, I think, is what makes it a good choice for a campaign world. There are ruins from ages past, and I will get it out of your brain eventually. You know why those ruins are there. So it's got this weight and heft to it.
It's pretty unique, you know, instead of going, let me flip to page 148 and read about this icon, you can email them and go, hey, since I'm following you or you're a player in my world, what should I do?
Yeah.
There's actually interaction with because they're past players who've played for the last 12 years. They go, oh, well.
Let me tell you about this.
This is what you should do.
But like you said, Becca, because all of these ruins aren't quite freely defined for everyone, mm-hmm. it's a good fit for 13th Age.
Yes.
You know, because there is... I mean, not just are we talking the 13th Age or Archmage Engine mechanics of this, but if you actually wanted to call it 13th Age in this world, there is those past ages right there. You could make it yourself. You mm-hmm. could take the Book of Ages and kind of run through it and flesh out for your own table all of these other places as mm-hmm. well.
Right.
It feels familiar enough that you as a player can step into it. And when the GM turns the question back on you and says, well, what does your icon say about this place? You as a player can feel comfortable enough to say, well, I will add to this and I will help create this mm-hmm. world.
Yeah. And we're going to be looking into some way that we can get player feedback if you're using the adventures, if you're using the world to influence products further coming down the line. But I do think that we've got a great world. We're all familiar with it. Becca's doing an amazing job of writing up amounts to over a decade's worth of crazy man notes and conspiracy boards written in OneNote into something that's actually usable for us to prep our next set of random encounters and to adapt the previous random encounters. So this is not just going to be me talking. This is all of us talking about Tanar. So what is Tanar?
So we call it a Gygaxian world. So a RPG world that has the monsters, it has the elves, it has the dragons, the orcs, the... what you would find in a fantasy world. However, some of those things that I just mentioned have a twist to them. There are no orcs and goblins. There is a special breed of creature called the Var. Mm-hmm. Varlings, Var-ilk.
Varil.
Yeah, hang on.
They kind of replace all the humanoid orc, goblin, mm-hmm. bugbear into those.
And we're going to have monster critters. Stats that we're working mm-hmm. for those.
But you can also just take 13th Age monsters using and use them in this, except for...
dragons. There's a mystery going on in Tanar, and there are no dragons anymore. And in fact, most people, they either don't believe they ever existed, or there is this almost species-wide terror when someone mentions dragons. And so we're gonna delve into that as we kind of go through our random encounters and move mm-hmm. on through that. But it's a mystery. It's a mystery because the game is called The game that all of this is based off of, you know, why we call it Gygaxian Fantasy is because it was Gary Gygax and he made Dungeons and Dragons. And so for whatever wild hair that bit us back in the day, we were like, well, let's take one of those two things out. Well, we can't take dungeons out. So dragons are gone. Why? And we've got a mystery there. But for everyone out there, if you end up using any of this, why I think dragons are gone may not be the same reason you think dragons are gone. And when dragons return, it may not be the same reason at all.
Yeah, mm-hmm. there would be a good campaign arc or a one unique thing or something like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
The other thing that's kind of, for lack of a better word, iconic about Tanar is this deific iconic cycle where adventurers could ascend and even become gods. Mm-hmm. And so the gods have to have worshipers in order for them to exist as gods. And as soon as the worshipers start dying off or becoming lax in their ministrations, then all of a sudden the god loses its power and ends up descending and kind of dissolving into a bit of nothingness.
Yeah.
So there's this constant cycle taking place in the heavens as entities ascend and gain that those followers and the power and the chains that come with that and those that are cycling out of it as well.
And that's kind of one of the fun things that when we hear about other people's 13th Age games, the ascension to iconhood is a very common end of campaign theme for 13th Age games.
Oh, yeah. The current game I have, that's one unique thing one of my players has is I'm a reincarnated icon. I want to become an icon.
Right.
We haven't gotten into who he's going to replace yet, but that's, you know, we're still second level. That's his end game is become an icon.
Well, and what's was interesting to me is BC and I built this before 13th Age was around. And when 13th Age came out, its ideas fit so well with my ideas that's why I fell in love with the game. It was a near perfect match. And Nick had already been playing in Tanar, and that was kind of our stepping stone is going, well, this would be perfect for it. I think you played in my first 13th Age game and it was set in Tanar because it was super easy to port over.
But speaking of icons, as the players are ascending, we wanted to do a real quick overview of the icons that are present in the Tanar as it is right now.
And much like if you've listened to our last couple of interviews, these are the icons that are prevalent in this area that we're initially looking at in Tanar, an area called the Desolates. And we'll get into that here in a second, but just there's plenty of room to expand and do your own thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as we continue and move around, you might be introduced to other icons.
Right.
So we're not going to limit our end game to 13, but initially we'll have 13 to start.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Kind of go with that trope.
Yeah, there are 13 icons for the area of the Desolates where we are starting. And one of the more benevolent icons out there is the Spell Queen. She is very much, if we are going to liken it to something from the Dragon Empire, the Elf Queen. She is an elf. She rules over the Estolon Woods and the wild elves there. And she has worked with other icons to defeat demon lords, to protect her people. We've been working to make sure that similarly, all of our icons are interlinked. There are allies, there are enemies, there are friends and foes as they go around. And so one of these is the Spell Queen. She would be more of your elven icon.
Right.
The next one that I'll talk about is called the Wanderer. And he's an immortal soul that has kind of been removed from that deific cycle. He's benevolent. He fights evil, but he pops in and out of myths across all the ages. Mm-hmm. So it could be someone you meet, you know, the old man in the corner that you help somehow might be the Wanderer. So he's kind of benevolent, fights evil, influences some of the other icons just because he's been around forever. And it'll be up to you as far as who he was or why he's here.
We also have the Guild of the Falling Leaves, and it's a trading guild that kind of has its webs interspersed throughout the entire Desolate area. From a resident's perspective, they're obviously neutral. I mean, they are willing to make deals with anybody and everybody as long as the price is right. But there's always this subtle sense that they're up to something. But I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's because this is what someone else has hired them to do or if this is their own machinations. But they do have agents everywhere. And all you got to do is maybe raise the flag or say, hey, I need to hire someone to do this. And I'm sure the guild will be more than happy to take your coin.
Mm-hmm. Right. And they're kind of our Prince of Shadows sort of analog in the fact that, I mean, they may move grain, but the guild really more deals in items and places and people that need to be shipped of extraordinary worth and value. So there's also Demoloth, who's known as the Lord of Undeath. He is not your typical sort of undead, like, lich or anything like that. He is a demon of plague. And the plague that he spreads slays people and brings them back. If you need that evil necromancer icon, the Lord of Undeath, Demeloth, is kind of your demonic version of that.
Mm-hmm. For your druidic players, we have the Keeper of the Sands. She is one of our new player races that players can use called an Oxen. This is a ram-like creature, not similar to a minotaur. Curly horns, fluffy wool. They're adorable, Nick. Nick plays one in one of our games.
Yeah. No, I play one too. Yeah.
Oh, you do.
So the Oxen was my very first role-playing game character. So that race will always have a special place in my heart.
They're better than minotaurs.
They are right? So much better.
Well, the Keeper of the Sands is an Oxen, and she is your druid icon. She cares about the land. She cares about the Desolates, and she wants to make sure that the Desolates come back to life. Ages ago, this place was destroyed. Life is coming back. People are moving back. The world is regrowing here, and she wants to make sure it happens. She happens to be a mortal icon, and so when she dies, there's that question of who will become the next icon there. Mm-hmm. So that's one of those where if you have players who want to become an icon, look to our mortal icons, the ones that will pass eventually. That's where players can easily step into it without getting locked into our deific cycle.
Right. That brings us to the next mortal icon, the Empress. Just to the north of the Desolates is the Cardane Empire. She's a ruler. Their symbol is the Raven Axe. And the Empire, kind of her take is, if you're not expanding, you're shrinking. So they're trying to expand their influence south into the Desolates as things are starting to come back. And it's not just the barren wasteland. Caravans are moving through there and such. So that's your Emperor equivalent icon.
So one of the things that is also unique about Tanar is there's kind of this, let's describe it as kind of this eggshell surrounding the entire world. And that shell is what's keeping all of the demonic and chaotic forces at bay. And every time that you summon a demon, it creates a little crack in that shell. You pull it through, and over time, that crack will heal itself. Well, there's this cult for the icon of the firstborn who is seeking to, rather than always having to be pulling those demons in through that shell, actually raising one, giving birth to one inside the mortal world itself. And that is the icon of the firstborn. This one's interesting because the creature itself, the icon, doesn't actually exist yet. But the cult that's trying to go out bringing it about, that is in existence, and it mm-hmm. is a mover and shaker in the Desolate area.
Yeah, we've already kind of mentioned Histall, who's known as the Grasp of Vengeance. He is the high priest of the Goddess of Vengeance that we'll get to here in a second. But because of multiple encounters with PC groups where... So normally, the protagonist is the person who changes in the story, and the antagonist is the one who provokes change. In Histall's case, every group that has encountered him have provoked him to change. They have shown him how small his plans were originally, all the way to how small the world actually is. And he is the high priest of the God of Vengeance, but he is one of those people with power who's not afraid to trade and use it for his own gain, not for his church's gain. And he's on the cusp of stepping out into something more. And what that is remains to be seen, both in our game and yours. Mm-hmm.
The host is not a single icon, but the pantheon for your players to look at and choose from. This would be the gods that your clerics would follow and pray to. And depending on the race of your cleric or your paladin character, you can pull from any of the different pantheons. We have elven. We have an elven pantheon. We have a dwarven pantheon of the Bound Lords. We have the Oxen pantheon and one of the other races that you can play, the Tawn, which are lizard-like creatures. They are atheists, so you can follow their historical figures.
Yeah, they have patrons that they follow, and they never ascend to godhood, but they are kind of ideals that the Tawn live up to.
But yeah, so this host is going to be more of your deities versus a single person or icon to follow. It's more of a choice for flavor of your characters.
Yeah. Next, we have the Possessed King, which is our equivalent of the Dwarf King. Dwarves in Tanar are not your high fantasy gleaming cities. They're in the decline. Their gods are frozen away. mm-hmm. and they're only in a few areas, and they're still dwarves, but they're not quite the same as in probably your world now. But definitely not 13th age, you know, you won't find the big cities kind of close away. Still the same, stone does not waver, does not change. They're trying to cling to the past, don't quite have the same skills that the past ages had for whatever reason, and that's what you can discover why or make up why when you run your engine, why the dwarves are in decline. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And will they ascend again?
And we've talked about that deific cycle where you have to, you know, raise up all of the worshipers to ascend. But there was a god who had a number of children, and they decided that they wanted to shortcut that whole process. They ended up slaying their father and then eating his flesh and being perverted in that whole process. Collectively, they are the icon of the perversions, but the six children embody kind of these different perversions of even humanity that we can relate with. Think of like the seven deadly sins. Those are the type of perversions that these embody as well. They have six siblings who do not partake of their father's flesh, but they're afraid of their brothers and sisters.
I don't know why.
Cannibalism, yeah, man.
Who knows? Yeah.
The next one I'll talk about is the Rivener. Would you say he's more of a neutral?
I think so. Yeah.
He's a revenant, but don't hold it against him. Holds a special place in my heart because this was the 12 years ago my son played this as a character, and through his choices, he became known as the Condemned because of some things he did. He's Lord, well, he has allies in the Lord of Undeath, but he goes around and tries to do good, I think. And if there's something going wrong, he tries to blow it up.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a warlord in a past age, and he was cursed to Undeath by the Wanderer.
Yeah. And he travels now. He travels around trying to do things and
the reason we have him in a more neutral position is because it doesn't matter the reasoning for your choices. If what you are doing could potentially harm Tanar, he will end you.
He's almost like the Crusader in that mm-hmm. the ends.
Yeah.
Yeah. The ends justify the means. I don't care why you're doing X.
Yes. Yes. He might not come across as a nice guy, but he's trying to help Tanar.
Yeah. And then the last of them is kind of the one that we're going to be focusing on in our random encounters, tying in some of our previous random encounters too, is the Red Alchemist. She is a icon that is sort of your, kind of like your Archmage in the fact that magical experiments is kind of her deal.
But or Diabolus maybe?
Even the Diabolus a little bit too, yeah, kind because...
straddles both.
Yeah. She creates new creatures. So in Tanar, aberrations were created... creatures at some point as weapons of war, and the Red Alchemist is trying to bring that back. So she's got a little Prince of Shadows in her too. She'll throw these extravagant parties and have pit fights between new hybrids that she's created and then auction them off to the highest bidder. So if you're a warlord in the Southern Desolates and you want to go to war, well, maybe she can whip up a pair of something for you that will give you the edge in this battle, but she's probably also selling to the other side. So.
True. And as it is in science, there are failures.
That's true.
Sometimes you meet the failures wandering the desolates. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Becca, you mentioned that we have a couple of new races that we're going to be bringing to the table. However we end up introducing this, whether they just go directly to our Patreon supporters as, you know, thank you for supporting us, whether they get tied into an adventure. Mm-hmm. Do you want to give us an overview of the races real quick? We kind of touched on the
option. Yeah. So these races are our introduction to Tanar, and they're more natural and have that fantasy where you want to play the Minotaur or you want to play the werewolf or the panther person. So there it's the oxen, which is a ram. It is not a Minotaur, with their curling horns and their ability to headbutt. There are the wolfen, who along with the pantherin were created and know that they are a created race. They were not born into this world, but someone somewhere, sometime made them. They look like wolves. They have wolfish abilities. Pantherin have panther abilities. Makes sense. And then one of the last new ones that we are introducing is the Tawn, and they are lizard men.
And we still have elves.
Oh, so yeah. So there are elves. There are all the different types in this world. They call themselves the Senti, and they each have, you know, there's differences. So they're all of the 13th age core races are still in the game, and they're still alive in the world. So we're going to kind of wrap up here with kind of explanation of what the Desolates are, why we're putting it here, and hopefully whet your appetite for our random encounters that will be coming up. So the Desolates are kind of our borderlands, the places where adventurers would need to go. To the north of the Desolates is the Cardane Empire. They've just recently expanded just to the edge of the Desolates. So there's a home base in the city of Druthen. There's a number of other small towns in around there. To the west, you have Shadow's Reach, where the Perversions are. It's kind of our
Shadowport?
Take on... Well, Shadowport...
Goes bad.
Barovia, Gotham, the places where, your paladin who thinks that she is super righteous and is going to go cleanse this evil that stood for a couple thousand years. Yep. Shadow's Reach is either going to corrupt them, chew them up, or spit them out. It's not a nice place to go, but it is a useful place to go. It is a useful evil on the alignment scale. You also have the Elven Woods to the west, and then to the east is an ocean, and to the south, nobody really knows what's to the south. There's the whole southern continent southern half of the continent that's kind of cut off by these desolate wastes. So we've got varied terrain options, a long history that is sort of unknown to most of, the new kingdoms of this area. And so it's a perfect place for adventurers. There's also so much old history and magic in the Desolates that our hope is that it's one of those areas that you can run one to 10 in multiple times. Mm-hmm. You've been doing a lot of the write-ups and
I have. So if you go back to season 2, the random encounters that were created here on Iconic, there was the swamp encounter, and we've placed the swamp here in the Desolates on the southern edge of the Estalyn Forest. It is where you are going to find that adventure. So it was a lot of fun to take the previous encounters and place them into this world. Our castle adventure, where there's possibly a floating castle in the sky, is in our Broken Chain Mountains along the Cardane Empire.
I don't know if we can fit Santa in here.
Santa's special.
Sounds to me like he works for the Guild of Falling Leaves.
Dude, that's right. Seriously. The Son of the Living Dungeon. There are the Desolate's Quarries, places in the ground that have been ripped apart from some previous battle in another age. And now people have realized, hey, we can pull the rock out. It's good marble. It's good sandstone. It's good whatever you need that quarry to be. It's here in the Desolates. So we're taking what we have already given you in our podcast and our random encounters and placing it here and giving it somewhere for you to use and bounce around. When we go into future adventures, we are going to be using the towns, the places of the Desolates. And it is our hope that when we send these out for you to get a hold of, we'll also be sending out this information packet so that you will have information on the Desolates and on the people and on the icons. You don't have to re-listen to this podcast multiple times to try to get all of your information.
That's true. Yeah. And this kind of stuff that we're pushing out to our patrons first. And when we hit a different tier, we're going to make it available publicly. But this is kind of our overview for everybody to say, here's kind of where Iconic is going to be going with our random encounters. Our goal is actually to try to every season do one arc of random encounters, kind of link them together, do two encounters per tier. So there'll be six of our 26-ish episodes will be tied to here. So don't worry if you got through this and you're like, nah, it's not going to be a huge chunk of our show, but it's something that we want to do and provide to our listeners.
And as we're doing the random encounters, obviously as we're kind of spitballing and brainstorming, even if you aren't going to be taking these and using them in Tanar, they should provide you with enough fodder to make the adaptations and use it in whatever your homeworld is.
Yeah. But again, as Mark said, he's got adventures that he's looking at doing. I've got some short stories that we may decide to push out. Becca is doing an amazing job taking all of the chaos of our random encounters and organizing them.
It's fun. We have enjoyed playing in it, and we just want to share that joy with our listeners.
So any final thoughts, any final comments?
Well, the only thing that comes to mind is, as our listeners, as you've been hearing us, I'm sure that you can see how much we love this world and how much we have personally invested of ourselves into it to varying degrees. But I really do think that this is a world and a setting where everyone can find enjoyment in. I think that we love it not just because we helped make it, but it really is a good setting that would be for everybody, or at least everyone who loves fantasy.
Yeah. Yes.
Hopefully you'll enjoy it too. Huh?
And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast. Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.